So I think it's actually, you know, quite healing for us just to look at what our parents did do for us, and that we wouldn't be here with the skills we know now and the opportunities we have now if it weren't for our parents. Yeah. Or if our parents couldn't take care of us, they made sure somebody took care of us, because we're alive now. And if nobody had taken care of us when we were little, we wouldn't be alive now. So clearly, there were a lot of people who took care of us when we were little. Whether it was our parents or babysitters or relatives or who knows what, there were a lot of people who cared about us. Because when we were infants and toddlers, we could not take care of ourselves. And the only reason we survived was because other people cared for us. Yeah, think about it. You know, we came out of the womb. You know, we're sitting there just going, bah! You know, peeing and pooing in our diapers and crying. You know, we can't even vocalize what we need. We can't even put the blanket on ourselves. We can't take the blanket off. We can't get food. We can't even turn over when we're babies. Somebody had to, like, pick us up and turn us over. We couldn't do anything except cry, eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom, you know, and leave it for somebody else to clean up. Yeah? So, I mean, look at the incredible kind of kindness that we received, you know, so early on in our life from many people. And I think we really have to look at that very closely and let ourselves feel some gratitude for that. Because when we do, this complaining, dissatisfied mind that feels like nobody has ever cared about us vanishes. Because we see that actually people did care about us. They kept us alive when we couldn't take care of ourselves. They taught us to talk. You know, a skill that's quite important that we take for granted, that we only have because other people taught us. We know how to tie our shoes because other people taught us. We know how to eat with a knife and a fork and a spoon and chopsticks because other people taught us. We know how to wash dishes because they taught us. You know, so many things that we do on a day-to-day level that we take for granted, we only know because other people taught us. Yeah. And so to really feel how dependent we've been on the goodwill and good wishes of others just to stay alive and just to learn whatever we have learned. And, you know, when we get in touch with that, then our heart just really opens to such an incredible feeling of gratitude, because we see that we have been the recipient of a tremendous amount of kindness. Yeah. And then when you hear the chainsaws and you think of the loggers, you know, instead of getting angry, you think, that's somebody who took care of me when I was an infant in one lifetime or another. You know, that's somebody who took care of me when I couldn't take care of myself. And then, you know, we even start thinking about some of the difficulties our parents may have had in raising us. Yeah, we very seldom think of that. We usually look at it from our viewpoint, what they didn't do for us. But think about the difficulties they had in bringing us up. You know, what was going on in their lives when they had us? Yeah? Were they economically secure when we popped out of the womb? Or were they scrambling just to feed us and working very hard just to get the money to feed us? Yeah? And think of the times that they got sick, but they got injured and, you know, they couldn't work, and so they worried so much about being able to feed us and take care of us. and yet they somehow managed. Think about all the times whoever it was who took care of us when we were an infant woke up in the middle of the night to feed us. We never said thank you as infants, you know. We screeched at the top of our lungs until they woke up. They fed us. We didn't even say thank you. Yeah, we just went back to sleep, you know, and left the dirty diapers for them to clean up. Yeah. And think of, you know, how many hours your parents or whoever took care of you when you were little spent working at a job just to feed you. No, it wasn't easy for them. And sometimes you may have been laid off from their job and they were worried about how to get the money, and, you know, or sometimes they worked overtime or they worked two jobs or whatever just to get the money to be able to feed us. And then what did we do is we said, so-and-so has that toy. I want that toy. How come they get to have it and I don't? Were any of us like that when we were kids? You know, were we bratty little kids just thinking of what we wanted? You know, not seeing the situation of our parents? So sometimes this can be really helpful, you know, and we really begin to see that our parents were just ordinary human beings. No, they weren't Buddhas, but they were certainly doing the best they could given the situation they were born into, you know. And whatever they couldn't do for us, it wasn't because they didn't care. It was because of the situation they were in, you know, or the mind state they were in, you know, due to the conditioning that they had had. So when I think we really spend some time thinking about this, then, you know, instead of seeing the glass half empty with everything we didn't get that we thought we deserved, we'll see really how much people did do for us. And then, you know, you remember, oh, the logger, you know, did that for me in some other lifetime. Yeah. And that rat, you know, was crawling around in my attic, did that for me, other lifetime. Yeah. And, you know, Donald Rumsfeld, believe it or not, did that for us in another lifetime. You know, so we really begin to feel quite close to others, and to really, our perception of ourselves changes from somebody who has always experienced a lack of something to somebody who's been incredibly fortunate and been the recipient of a lot of kindness. And I think that's pretty important, you know, to feel that way. And even about our teachers as we were growing up. You know? Teaching, I think, is one of the hardest professions there is. It's, you know, they don't receive very much gratitude. The kids complain about them. The parents complain about them. The administrators complain about them. Yeah. But without our grade school teachers, where would we be? Yeah, we may not have liked school, but somehow they managed to teach us something because we know how to read and write. Yeah, we got to give them credit. Yeah, we may have all been dropping our rulers at 10 o'clock. Remember doing that? Or we may have all, you know, you pass around a note in the class, everybody drop their ruler at 10 o'clock. Remember to do that? Some of you just... Or you think of everything that, you know, how our teachers were trying so hard to teach us, and meanwhile we were writing notes to each other behind their back, remember? you know, or we were writing notes from our parents excusing us from school that day. Yeah, I mean, we did all sorts of incredibly naughty things. And yet somehow our teachers managed to teach us to read and write, and they managed to give us some kind of basic education, even though we were fighting them the whole way. Yeah? So, you know, just being able to look at them and see them as having been kind to us for what they did to them for us. And then think of everybody who had to discipline us as we were growing up. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think I was necessarily the easiest kid to raise. Yeah. Anybody else here a little bit bratty, unruly, yeah, out of hand? So when you think of what our parents had to do to just teach us to have human manners so that we would get along with other people. You know, we would cry, we would throw temper tantrums, we would shout at our family members and call them names and accuse them of all sorts of things and stomp out and not tell them where we were going, or sneak out and not tell them where we were going, and you know. And yet they had to discipline us in the wake of all of that and try and teach us proper conduct so we could get along in the world without alienating everybody else around us. Because if left to our own devices, you know, we would still be acting like 2-year-olds. I mean, we still do. We just refined it a bit now. Yeah. But at least we've refined it. But you think of, you know, those of you who are parents, is it easy bringing up a kid and having to discipline a kid? You know, and if it's hard when they're 2 years old, what happens when they're a teenager? You know, when the kids are bouncing off the wall, you know, and you're trying to help them grow up, and they're just like all over the place. And yet our parents went through our teenage years with us. Somehow they survived. We should give them survivor awards, you know. So I think it's helpful to remember this and to really appreciate what others have done for us. And then that changes our whole attitude towards them, because then we really do sincerely see them as having been kind. And the things they did when they messed up, okay, you know, they're human beings. They make mistakes. But on the overall, you know, they were really, really kind to us. So I think, you know, that this kind of perspective, if we take that, and again, it doesn't take long to describe it in a teaching, but to really practice it and put it in our heart and train our mind so that whenever we see somebody, this is what we see. Yeah. To really do that, that takes some time and energy on our part. But the more we're able to do that, then the more our mind is so much more relaxed and joyful and less filled with negativity and resentment. Yeah? And more filled with loving kindness. And that loving kindness is able to be extended to everybody because they were all our parents in previous lives. And until we get out of cyclic existence, some of them are going to be our parents in future lives too. And so we see them as kind. Or they were our teachers in previous lives. Or they were our grandparents, or the babysitters, or whoever it was who took care of us. You know? So all these different people, some who we know, some who we don't know, some who we like, some who we don't like. We've all had this kind of relationship with them, and we've received so much benefit and kindness from them. really feeling that. Okay. Now, one thing that sometimes makes it difficult is because they don't look like our mother in this lifetime, or they don't look like our parents, or, you know, whatever. They look like a wasp. Yeah. And they're buzzing around, and, you know, they go, you know, and you're least, you know, anticipating it. And they sting you. Or they look like a mole or a vole or a mosquito or, you know, a tarantula or, you know, a cockroach or, you know, a centipede or a scorpion or, you know, they're born in that kind of form. And we look, oh, that's a scorpion. Yuck, you know, get away from it. But if you just see, well, that's the form this life. But actually, they're a continuation of the person who's been very kind to me. So they sometimes give an analogy of, let's say you were a child, you know, and there's lots of kids who have this situation, and you were separated from your parents when you were very young. Maybe there was a war in your country or some kind of tragedy or something. You were separated from them when you were very young, and, you know, somebody else raised you and you grew up, and you were old enough to have a memory of, you know, your first parents. And later on, as an adult, you're walking down the street, you know, in downtown somewhere, and there's some street person sitting there, kind of dirty and slovenly and whatever, asking for some food. And, you know, maybe you pull out a granola bar and you kind of go, give it to them, you know. Or maybe because you've been to a Dharma class, you offer it respectfully with both hands. But in any case, while you're offering it to them, you all of a sudden look and you realize, wow, that looks like my parent, you know. And then you start talking to them. And you realize, wow, they are your parent, your mom or your dad, that you were separated from when you were very young. Yeah? So here's this street person that, you know, you were kind of cautious about. And then at first, and a little bit hesitant to enter it anyway. And then you realize that, you know, it's one of your parents that you haven't seen in 20, 30, 40 years. Does your whole feeling change? It does, doesn't it? Whole feeling completely changes. So, you know, it's the same way when we look at the centipede or the cockroach or the scorpion or, you know, whoever it is. It's just, you know, we don't recognize them at first because they look different. You know, years have gone by, so they look different. But if we train our mind, then we do recognize them. Oh, this is somebody who's been kind, who's taken care of me. Yeah? Then your whole feeling about them automatically changes. You know, you don't have the same thing of, you know, fear and suspicion and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah? You're seeing somebody who's been kind. Yeah? I work a lot with inmates, and the inmates all say to me, you know, in here, kindness is seen as a weakness. And if you're kind, people are going to take advantage of you. I think we really have to understand what kindness is, okay, and what compassion is. Kindness and compassion don't mean that you become the world's doormat, okay? Kindness doesn't mean, oh, somebody wants a bottle of booze, so you give them a bottle of booze. You know, or somebody wants some speed, so you give them some speed. That's not kindness. Okay, kindness doesn't mean you give everybody what they want. Kindness doesn't mean you do everything that they want you to do. Because sometimes they want you to cheat, and sometimes they want you to lie, and sometimes they want you to do bad business deals, and sometimes they want you to sell drugs, and, You know, so kindness does not mean that we do everything somebody else wants us to do. Kindness means that we're looking out for that person's long-term benefit, and we're even willing to risk our popularity with them in order to be kind and do what is really going to be a benefit to them in the long term. Okay. And so this is what I tell the guys that I write to. You know, you can still be very firm when you're kind, and kindness doesn't have to be a weakness. There can be a certain firmness and integrity, and at the same time, kindness. And similarly, doing what somebody else wants does not necessarily mean you're kind, because being a people pleaser is not necessarily being kind. It's usually looking out for ourselves. Or if you're afraid of somebody and you're kind because you're afraid of them, you know, that's when they see you as being weak. Prison environments are quite dangerous, you know. Somebody is kind of bullying somebody else around. They really prey on the people who they see as weak. So if somebody else is weaker and they feel afraid, that just attracts that energy, and they're going to be exploited. But if they're weak in a physical way or whatever, but they have their own sense of human dignity, and they're kind, and they're not afraid of the other person, then the other person isn't going to prey on them. Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah? It's being clear that people often see kindness as weakness. Okay. But I only think kindness is seen as weakness when we're afraid of the other person, in which case it isn't really kindness we're showing them. It's people-pleasing because we're afraid. Whereas when we have our own sense of dignity, yeah, we can do what somebody else wants if we feel it's appropriate, or we could not do what they want if we feel it's not appropriate. But we're not afraid of them, and they're going to pick up instead on our own sense of our own integrity. Okay? Which is a totally different kind of feeling than if we're being weak. Okay? So, you know, I say this because some people are very afraid of kindness. Yeah, they think it means weakness. Or they think if you're compassionate, you feel everybody else is suffering so much that you can't move. You know, you're overwhelmed by the sense of the suffering of the planet. So I know a lot of activists feel this. Maybe I better talk a little bit about this. Okay? And this sense of overwhelm when you see the suffering. We usually think that is the foundation of compassion. That if you are compassionate, you feel overwhelmed by the suffering. I don't think that's the exact meaning of compassion. From a Buddhist viewpoint, compassion is wanting sentient beings, ourselves or others, to be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. So the object of the compassion, the one we're paying attention to, is the other. You know, or if we're having compassion for ourselves, we're, you know, paying attention to our own misery at that moment. But when we get overwhelmed, what has happened is we've stopped really paying attention to the person that we're having compassion for. And instead, we're feeling personal distress at their misery. And personal distress is different from compassion. Because when we feel personal distress, the focus is no longer on the other person, it's on me and my sense of distress. Okay, do you see the difference here? Yeah? When we have compassion, we're focused on the other's misery. We still may feel that their suffering is unbearable, but we haven't fallen into a sense of personal distress about their suffering. When we fall into personal distress, that's when we feel overwhelmed by the misery of the world. And when we feel overwhelmed, then that's when we feel burnout and we quit. Okay? So this, I think, is one of the things that enables a bodhisattva to really continue on in the face of all adversity. When you raised the question a couple of days ago about bodhisattvas wanting to liberate all sentient beings and how do they hang in there with it, I think that it comes from really keeping the focus on others' misery and having compassion for it and not slipping into personal distress. That's one factor. And I think another thing that enables bodhisattvas to be very strong is that they see that the other's suffering only exists because the causes of that suffering exist. In other words, suffering is not something inherently existent. Suffering is not a done deal. It's not fated and predetermined. Okay, it's not willed. It's not punishment. Suffering simply arises because that sentient being created the causes to experience suffering. So when you look at it that way, then you say, okay, there's causes to this suffering. Suffering only happens because the causes were created. Can we eliminate those causes? And we see that the root causes are the ignorance, the mental afflictions, and the karma created out of them. Can these be eliminated? Well, yes, they can, because the karma depends on the afflictions, the mental afflictions, and the mental afflictions depend on ignorance. And ignorance is a misapprehension, a misconception. It's an incorrect mind. So a mind that is perceiving things incorrectly can be eliminated by generating the mind that sees things correctly. Okay? The mind that is afraid of the elephant in the room can be eliminated by the mind that realizes there is no elephant in the room. Okay? Yeah? So, if ignorance is grasping at things as existing in a way they don't, then when wisdom realizes that how the object that is perceived by the ignorant, inherent existence, does not exist, never has existed, never will exist, then we see the ignorance can be eliminated. Okay. If the ignorance can be eliminated, then the mental afflictions cease, then the karma for rebirth ceases, then the whole mass of suffering ceases. So a bodhisattva knows this very clearly, and that gives them the courage to really work to benefit others and themselves, because they know that suffering isn't a given, that suffering can be eliminated. Okay? So therefore, they always have a very optimistic mind. Okay? Now, an optimistic, hopeful mind does not mean that you have the expectation that everything's going to be transformed instantly. Okay? Don't confuse optimism with unrealistic expectation. We do that a lot. Yeah? We think optimistic. You know, we think, oh, I'm optimistic. Oh, so everything that I want to happen is going to happen right away. Well, no, that's unrealistic. It's going to take a while for it to happen, but it's possible to go in that direction, and we're going to do our best, and at least from our own side, we're going to keep going in that direction. So therefore, we're optimistic. But we don't expect things to turn around right away. And so that makes the mind very, very strong so that we can continue doing whatever beneficial activities we're doing no matter what happens. Okay? There's bumps in the road. You know, we go three steps back before we go another step forward. We're not worried about that because we're really focused on the final outview, on the final outlook, final goal, and we know that that is possible to attain. And we're just willing to hang in there no matter how long it takes. Okay? So you see how different that is from the mind of personal distress, where instead of we've stopped being focused on the others, and now it's like, I can't bear seeing the suffering. I want them to stop suffering because I'm in pain when I see them suffer. Okay? It's a subtle change, but it's actually quite a big one. Yeah. So I can't bear to see them suffering. This is too heavy on me. I'm burnt out. And anyway, what to do because, you know, nothing's happening the way I want. These beings are so ignorant. Therefore, I quit. Okay? So there, those are the optimism and compassion of a bodhisattva. You know, you can see how they differ greatly from when the mind that is overwhelmed by personal distress and gets discouraged and gives up. Okay? And I think it's so important for us to have that long-term view so that we just keep going. You know? We just keep going. And we take joy in the doing of it, regardless of the, you know, the temporary results, you know, whether things are going according to how we want or not, we take joy just in working to go in that direction. Okay?